our colleagues from the Department of Trade and Industry. Before we can start with our meeting, can we perhaps start with introduction so that we can get to know who is here, in what doing what, at what institution. I will start with myself. This thing is not let me sit up. Oh, okay. Yo, now it's better. I can see everybody. I'm going to start with myself. My name is Kuwoleda Sijuba. I'm the chairperson of the portfolio committee. And I will allow honorable members also to do the same before we go to the subcommittee members.
Morning, colleagues. My name is Martin Say. I'm a member of this portfolio committee.
Good morning, my name is Natasha Zoni. I'm a member of the portfolio committee.
Terry Sander, member of the portfolio committee.
We now allow the officials from DDI to introduce themselves.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. My name is Lionel October. I'm the Director General of the Department of Trade and Industry.
Madam Chair, my name is Debo Makubia, Local Content Office, DTI.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Sibo Tsegote from the DTI, Director General, responsible for Special Economic Zones and Economic Transformation.
Morning, Chair. My name is Meja Kumani. I'm the Director responsible for Rail Transport Equipment from the Department of Trade and Industry.
It's Lisa Teto from the Department of Trade and Industry, acting Chief Director for the BE Policy.
I'm
The department, are you introducing
yourself? Well, good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Mukare Silik, the Director General for Public Enterprise. Thank you.
Morning, Chair, Honourable Members, colleagues from DTI. My name is Nadir Mukulu, DTJ responsible for legal governance and risk.
Morning, my name is Makhola Bakololo, I'm the acting DDG for energy.
Morning, Chair, Honourable Members, colleagues from DTI, my name is Khomoto Malise, I'm the DDG responsible for transport enterprises.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members, my name is Nziki Mbono, I'm the DDG responsible for economic impact and police alignment at DP.
Good morning, I'm Kharazo Tlapudi. I'm the DDG for Manufacturing Enterprises at DPD.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Lohan Gambi from Public Enterprises. I'm responsible for Transnet Oversight.
The department, can we go to Transnet or Eskom?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Anuj Singh. I'm the CFO of ESCOM, also in charge of procurement of ESCOM.
Good morning. My name is Delani. I'm acting chief procurement officer at ESCOM.
Morning, Chair. My name is Manda Kovina. I'm the GM in ESCOM, responsible for supply development and localization.
Morning, Chair Members. My problem is the manager of the affairs at ESCOM.
Good morning, Chair Members. My name is Ndombi Matomela, Parliamentary Affairs.
at Eskom.
Invited guests from CSIR, can they also introduce themselves? They are not invited, they just get crushed.
Good morning to any honorable members. My name is Elia from the parliamentary office of the CSIR.
Thank you. Anyone else who wants to do the introduction?
Hi, good morning. My name is Jeezel Paper and I'm a journalist from Pin 24.
Good morning. I'm Marco Schmidt, parliamentary liaison officer for the German Embassy in the Consulate General.
Good morning, I'm Simon Kwanazi, a journalist from Independent Newspapers.
There's one person who doesn't know me.
Morning, Sean Kirsten, gay researcher.
I don't understand who's here and according to the agenda and the purpose of this meeting, I think the relevant people are here to assist us to understand the issues involved. Let me also say we are here because we wanted to discuss challenges which we face as a country, challenges which inhibit the efforts of growing the economy, the efforts of localization, beneficiation, and also to assist small and medium enterprises to be established or to be there. That's the main purpose of today's meeting. We have decided to convene this meeting because we understand our situation economically, the current economic outlook. It looks very, it's not promising. That's a one sector, all of us we are worried. We have programs in place which we believe if we pay attention and have an honest discussion in relation to why are we not able to unblock the bottleneck, we can reach our goals as a country. We are also faced with a possible downgrade that will further complicate our situation. Because once we are there, we all know the implications. The reason why, again, we convene this meeting, we believe the state-owned enterprises together with the departments which are relevant in the economic cluster, we want to bring our heads together and see where are the bottlenecks. With these few words, I would like to welcome you and also request the department, which is the Department of Trade and Industry, just to take us through those challenges, if there are any. Obviously they are there. We don't have to ask. We'll request them to take us through. After the presentation, then we'll open up a floor for discussion. This portfolio committee meeting is structured in a manner in which we won't do like the normal procedures where the honorable members will interrogate the presentations and so on. It's an open discussion kind of a forum where we want to bring our heads together. So everybody is free to put the ideas on the table and without saying we are here to be interrogated by the portfolio committee. I will now hand over to DG to kickstart the process.
Honorable Chair, thank you very much. Presentation will
be done by myself and Boho and the colleagues. But firstly, let me really, really thank you, Chair, and the committee for convening this session. I think it's probably going to be in 15 years in the DTI. I think it's the first time ever we come together at such a level. So thank you very much. Because I think, as you indicated, given our global headwinds, which we have very little control over, these two issues of SOEs and localization, we have complete control over. And as I said, and I think you'll see through the presentation, but this is probably our biggest, has been, except for the past 2-3 years, our biggest lost opportunity for why we don't have high levels of employment in the economy. We'll I'll take you straight through the issue. Let me get to the heart of the matter. As you said, the key challenge we face now, and it's exacerbated in the current global climate, but as you know, the purpose of our industrialization policies and our localization policies to address the, mainly the challenge of unemployment and inequality. So that is the central purpose for that. As you know, our economy has always been dominated by the mining industry, and even industrialization that we did have was mainly focused on supplying that mining industry. That's why, as you said, we have got a lot of, you take the Katlehong, East Rand, Ekurhuleni, industrial heartland of South Africa, it was developed and mainly supplies the mining industry. As we know now, that the mining industry globally is in crisis because of the lack of demand from China. So we're going to see a break. You see that in Anglo-American, you've seen it in others, but all mining houses, there is going to be made a contraction in the mining industry because there's less demand for iron ore, for our platinum, for that and so on. So we need to find a different growth path in terms of for our economy. And what we say is this can only be, like in other countries, must be an infrastructure-led and agricultural-based growth path. That is the only way we're going to get out of the mess, but we cannot rely on the mining industry. So this presentation is very critical because, as you know, all other economies have industrialized on the basis of supplying infrastructure. They built the roads, the trains, the aircraft, water and energy. By getting local industries to supply those sectors, they built the industrial economy. So I think that is just on then the overall introduction of why infrastructure-led growth and industrialization are only root after the current difficulties. So in summary then, what have we had? As I said, there's been massive improvement in the past 2-3 years in terms of the SOEs. But to that, generally speaking, we can say that if you take the statistics as a whole, we are underspending on infrastructure. As a proportion of GDP compared to any other middle-income and developing countries, we are underspending the quantum of investment on infrastructure is very low, and that is one of the primary reasons for our low rate of our growth. I think you would know that we have massive backlogs. In energy, it was brought out, but it's not only in transport, in energy, in transport, in broadband, there's massive backlogs in terms of where we should be at in terms of infrastructure and so on. I think this stats just give you the proportion of GDP, what amount goes into fixed investment. And as you can see, it is declining. That's the level of as you can see, right from even in the 60s and 70s, that when we had the big programs, you can see there's been a decline. And before, I think fixed investment was 60-70% of GDP. We're going around about 50% now. And so I'm talking about the quantum of total fixed investment in our economy and so on. So again, you will see then, because the mining, the manufacturing industry has mainly been supplying the mining industry, you've also seen a decline in manufacturing. And I think the big example you will see now in Mpumalanga,
whereas you have Mthuli and Kosini project going up, you see Evra Steel closing down. So it is a very, very graphic illustration of Mthuli and Kosini, the biggest, biggest construction projects even globally. And right next door, the plant that makes steel closes down. And you have also Vital in the crisis and so on. That is because Mthuli and Kosini, very, very, if not in low levels of local content. So all the steel, all those products, all those boilers was imported. And so that's why I'm talking about a golden opportunity for us to have revived our steel industry, downstream steel industry, boiler making, transformers, everything in manufacture, which we did do before. As you know, the whole of the East Rand has been built around supplying those products. I think that just illustrates, because we didn't have localization, all of those products were imported into the industry. I think you will then see here, this gives you the imports and the exports, and as you can see, what we call the leakage. That is import leakage. This is where we import manufactured products into South Africa. It has been going up. As I said, basic things like steel, basic stuff like transformers, boilers, all these things we've been importing. And we've been getting it from other countries instead of making it ourselves. And as you know, we've got massive capabilities to do these things. So, as we said, Honorable Chair, we now do have a very clear plan. We said, let's go on a new growth path. And as I said, over the past year or two, we developed this 9-point plan. And that 9-point plan laid out the new growth path, which, as I said, should be based on infrastructure-driven industrialization and other parts which we are going here. But it's a massive revival of our agricultural sector and our agro-industries to drive labor-intensive growth. But I'll just focus on the energy. So what he's saying in the 9-point plan, if we can massively improve energy and broadband, that will automatically give us 2% growth rate. Because we know we're going to be below 1% growth this year. But if we invest in energy and broadband, and as you said, break the bottlenecks, actually rolling it out, not just have it on paper, but each of those programs rolled out. Just to give you an example, Honorable Chair, as you know, the energy program, the RIPP, we've attracted 190 billion rand just because government decided to roll out renewable energy. Just on Monday, we launched in close to Upington, I think it's they launched a massive 5 billion rand plant by Saudi Arabia. But that's because government rolled out the RIPP program, and they said we'll buy renewable energy, and then the private sector came in to invest in that program. So that shows you collaboration between public and private sector, but government took the lead by doing the fourth window of the RIPP program. And so a wonderful success story. We can do the same if we have a plan for energy, which I think we do have now, and we are broadband. But as I said, the plans are unfortunately still on paper, but there is now plans in place if we roll out. Similarly, transport. I must say transport is the one area where we have seen a complete turnaround. We've seen over the past 2 years real localization by Transnet and by PRASA. And as you can see now, I think my colleagues were there, but they opened the massive plant in Nigel for us to make our locomotives. And as I said, thousands and thousands of jobs will now be created because we're building our own trains and locomotives. So we can see in practice the success of if we do simple things like building our own trains and so on. We also see it in the bus industry. So in summary, Honorable Chair, the point is this, if we, as you said, if we can just break the bottlenecks in all three sectors, energy, broadband, and as I said, transport, there's massive opportunities for tens of thousands of jobs that will immediately be created. Because the point about all this localization is we are in any case sending the money. The point is only that money has been leaving the country. That is the only difference. So we've already got it on budget, we are doing it, and so on. I will go into that, but as you know, government
decided on 70%, we must set a target of 75% of all government's goods and services, which I think comes to about 500 billion a year, is the amount spent on procurement, and 75% of that must be local. And I will come to later, but I think we must have absolute agreement between the different tiers of government on what instruments and legal instruments we're going to be used to achieve that target. And that's why, Chair, I want to really say we sometimes don't all have very clear instructions from the leadership, DTI, National Treasury, and DPE and the SOEs. If we can get very, very clear instruction that we must implement that target of 75%, I think that will go a long way for us to break the bottlenecks within the bureaucracy. Honourable Chair, these are some of the leaders that we currently have for localization. We've got the famous NIPP program, which was famous during the arms deal. But that is basically where we provide some obligations to companies. We've got the defense industrial participation. We've got the CSDP program, which was adopted some years, and then we have designation of the group. Let me not go into detail, but let me just say the first three are very, very weak tools of localization because they impose no obligation on anybody to do products locally. So, and these are ones we've been using for the past, 15, 17 years. We've been using the top three programs and so on. The real tools with teeth and with legal force is designation, and I'll come to the two instruments. One which can be controlled by DTI and National Treasury, and the other one can be in the hands of the SOE directly, where we can propose, and these are the ones we've been using. So I'll just focus on the last two. As I said, this just gives you some of the areas why localization is important. Let me also just mention the relationship between black economic empowerment and localization. I think sometimes these two objectives are seen as, let's say, contradictory, that there's a choice between BEE and localization. I think in terms of government's policy of black industrialization and so on, they don't have to be, we must have both. We must have both empowerment and we must have localization. And we can see it in the bus industry. As you know, we designated the buses. So all the Rio Vaya, REA, My City buses are now bought locally. Unlike in 2010, when we imported all those buses for the 2010 World Cup, we now get all of them locally. And the biggest supplier and builder of these buses is a black industrialist. So you can do this. The same thing happened in shipbuilding. As you know, we designated the purchase of South African Navy and DPE Transnet. We designated that the ships and tugs must be built locally. So over the past year now, we have seen metal factories going into operation, producing our own boats, produced locally for the Navy and for Transnet. And therein, the biggest companies building the ships are black-owned companies. So you can have both localization and just like you have in any other country, in South Korea or Germany, you have German industrialists building local trains. You have local Chinese industrialists. So similarly, you can have local South Africans building our own products and so on. As I said, the very complicated formulas that we have now and that we have had for a number of years of how do we get more and more local content and so on. As I said, these tools are all very weak because there you are trying to encourage people to do localization. In all other countries in the United States, they just lay down a law. Buy American Act basically says to AMCAP, which is the United States' response net, they just lay down a rule for AMCAP. Every piece of railway equipment built in the United States will not only use American steel, but will also use American iron ore from the mining industry. And it is not a choice, it's not a thing, it is the Buy American Act. If you don't implement it, you are in breach of the law for doing that. So that is the United States. Other countries don't do it as strictly as the U.S., but they do it culturally.
So every train in France is built by Alstom. Every train in Germany is built by Siemens, and so on. They just take it as a given that these things will be built locally. But remember, the backward linkages are so important. Once you supply a train, you must then have a steel industry. So you have a steel industry. So you have all those back. And then if you need a steel industry, you need iron ore. So you have a mining industry supplying steel. Steel combines these resources and you build trains. And so you have a complete value chain in these countries. So in America, they've got a strong mining industry because the iron ore must go into American steel. American steel must go into every piece of railway track in the U.S. Tens of thousands of kilometers across the continent is built from American steel. So that is just how these countries industrialize. So as I said, we have very, very complicated, tricky formulas where we try to entice people to, as I said, like in Madupi for Sili. Complicated procedures, but as I said, the steel did not come from Evra steel. It came from somewhere else. Similarly, these things are the weightings and so on. But as I said, we want to propose, the board will go into detail, but we want to propose a rigid implementation of two measures, which I will come to now, which is really the two measures that we can use to drive localization. Now, it is the Parental Procurement Policy Framework Act. And basically, what was introduced in 2011, and it came to effect in the 7th of December, so it's really from 2012, but there's Section 9. Section 9, as you said, reads there, the regulations empowers the DTI to designate specific industries with tenders and prescribe that only locally manufactured products with a prescribed minimum threshold will be considered. Now, we have been using up to now this paragraph 9.1, so the DTI then designates the area. We do a research. We say, if I can give you an example of cloning textile footwear. This was the first one we designated. But as you know, we buy large amounts of clothing from our Defense Force, Navy, SAA, all of it used clothing. People had a very good time before 2011 when they went to go on overseas trips to go buy these products for SAA, for the Navy, and so on, police, and so on. We designated that 100% must be local. You now see a complete revival in the clothing and textile industry over the past 3 years. Jobs have not only stabilized at 68,000, but it's growing, and it's a labor-intensive sector, lots of global competition. 21 new leather factories have opened in a very, very difficult industry. For the simple reason now, they know that they must, our big companies buy from them, they get the orders from Yukandia and down the road in Cape Town. People producing for SAA, people producing for the police force, working the textiles in Paul, makes all the fabric in for these products and so on. So you've got clothing and textile, you've got clothing, you've got the fabric in textile, and then you've got leather and footwear and so on. So that can be used Section 9.1. Now, Honorable Chair, to be honest, there are many times we have proposed products, but then they are delayed in the short region. And so, for example, we designated shipbuilding and for almost a year, it was not designated. And then through the operation for KISA, we had the intervention from ministers and the presidency, Minister Khadeb and others, and what we have, we then designated it after the operation for KISA process, but there are delays in the implementation of Section 9. There's also disagreements about what we should designate or others, and that's why, as you said, there are the bottlenecks. For example, we can make transformers, if a Bojo can give us a concrete examples. We used to make all the transformers that's used in South Africa, big and small ones. You've had companies like Powertech, Altech, Aberdeen Cables, all of them have been making these things before. We asked for the designation of all of these. They only designated the smaller ones. So we have now, all the big ones with big jobs, we import, and we only make the small ones. So we have disagreement about the strict implementation
and delays in the in Section 69. Where we have done it very well is, for example, locomotives, and that's why you can see the plants being opened now by Transnet and PASA, because we designated locomotives and that went through very smoothly and absolutely great cooperation from Transnet and PASA with regards to implementing that. If we could repeat the same what we've done in rail and in buses and in clothing and textile, as I said, across the board, we'll immediately create all those jobs. So Section 9 is the big one. And then I'll just go. Let's give you a list of some of the sectors we've already designated. But as you said, it was a very big struggle for us to win this battle for localization, because people are resisted it, thinking we might get it cheaper if we import it. We'll get better value for money. So here you can see on the green side, those are the ones that have been designated: railway stock, bus bodies, canned and processed vegetables, as well as industry, textile, clothing, set-top boxes, very good. Pharmaceuticals, we've seen the creation of the biggest industries now, Aspen Pharmacare, all of them, because we designated pharmaceuticals, and the providers, all of them are done locally. These are the ones. Valve products you will see there. Immediately once we announced that we're going to be buying the valves locally, a company in Atlantis immediately set up shop because they could supply the local industry. That is valve manufacturing. As I said, transformers are unfortunately the only small ones. And then on the red is the one we are still looking for. It's still waiting with national treasury. This is building and construction materials, yellow metals, two-way radios, solar PV, L-signaling. All of these, again, can immediately create jobs, but we haven't got. Because DTI only has the power to recommend. I think the story and my colleagues are here, but they really must really congratulate and thank Transnet and others for what they've done in terms of us initiating the rail industry in South Africa. We have also, as you know, the European Union, we have now, because of what has been done locally, we have been designated as the locomotive manufacturer for the entire continent. So we will supply, but that is what you do, what can happen if you do do these things. This gives you some of the details my colleagues can go into, but as I said, there's now an entire, we recently opened the Alstom Gibela factory, I think a week or two ago. They opened that factory in Nigel, and from what I hear from my colleagues, it's going to transform that whole area in terms of creating jobs for young people, for engineers, for technicians, for even semi-skilled work. Because as you know, it is the backward linkages. It's not only that we build the trains, we also build the components, which is labor intensive. But then we also supply the steel, and then you revive the steel industry as well. So the entire backward linkages. It's not just the train itself. I think here again, let's just give you some examples of what can happen if you get cooperation of the different councils. We've been able to revive our foundry network because we supply this equipment and so on. I want to just get to the final. This gives you a breakdown of the PASA things. I'm not talking about the ones that were imported from Spain, but the other ones were local. And so, Honourable Chair, to give you the backward linkages, it is massive in terms of, as I said, the train, all of the jobs are created in the component. I'll give you an example of autos. In assembly, there's only 30,000 jobs created, but 70,000 in components. But remember, you can't get the 70,000 jobs without making the car here, because you don't export components on its own. And people, you don't buy components of a car, you buy the car. So you must have both. But if you don't get the first part, for example, making the Mercedes-Benz in South Africa, you can't get the component. So similarly, we can't get the component and we can't get the steel if we don't make the wagons and the locomotives. So that's what's important, that you're in the top of the order, what they call the OEM level,
original equipment manufacturing. That's when you catch first-tier supplier, second-tier, third-tier supplier. But you don't get the top one, you get nothing. And that is why we have such a high rate of unemployment. Because we've been losing out on the big ones, which means we import everything. I want to then just turn, there's another one where I think again we've, as I explained about Operation Paquita, I won't go into detail. This is also again in defense, where I think there's been high levels of local content, but again, the now, and as you know, we have capabilities producing aircraft, drones, military equipment. We've got a comparative and competitive advantage, and if we just localize. As you know, the biggest mistake of the arms deal was that 90% of the arms deal was imported. And we could have revived the now then already if we had given a bigger part of that contract. This explains to you what we do. And I said, all the skilled jobs, software design, electronics, all those jobs you lose if you import. And that's where we can create thousands of jobs for young, skilled technicians and engineers, electricians and so on, electronics, IT specialists you can develop if you win these things, because you have to do the hardware, the software, and everything. But as I said, we lose everything once we import the product. So I want to come then to the last one, which is there's two parts. There's the one which I just said, the DEI designated sector, but a much more powerful tool, as I said, as they have in the United States, where Amtrak is directly compelled to buy local. We have the same version here, which is the 9.3. It says that the SOE itself must designate the product to designate it for local. Very important, Chair, we just got about a week or two ago, we got a letter from Transnet to say they want to... for cranes. We got a request from Transnet to say they want to buy it, and they want to ensure that this is locally made, the cranes. And they want to get the authority permission to go 100% local or 100% local. Now the facility legally that they have is 9.3, and it's simple, then it's straightforward. As I said, of course, we must have the cooperation of National Treasury, but it will be very strong if it comes from DPE and the SOE, where they basically say, for example, transformers, all these products, if it can, then we don't have to go through the long process to get localization going. But so 9.3 is really the tool that we haven't ever used. We've used it once, apparently. We did it for Cape Town. Used it for transformers, where they said they will buy local transformers. But as I said, it really should be used by Eskom, by Transnet, by FASA, by all that. As I said, that is the way it's done in the U.S., where they compel the Amtrak to buy local. And it's very clear that there's no bureaucracy in between. There's no government departments getting involved. The SOEs know what they want, they know what they need, they've been working with suppliers for a long time, they know what can be done locally, they can, and so on. So they're also a very integral. So, Honourable Chair, those are the two instruments which we want to propose, and as I said, then we can get alignment between all our, between DTI Treasury, DPE, and Trial, and example here, we've got the case of where possible with transport. So I think finally, if I get to a conclusion, we have found that there's high levels of non-compliance. Even, for example, where we've designated areas, you find local municipalities or you find certain departments or others not doing that. So we have been actively engaged. We submitted a memorandum to Cabinet, where we're strengthening the measures for compliance, and we're also working with the Office of the Auditor General. About 3 weeks ago, we addressed all the senior managers in the Auditor General's office to say they do other audits. They must also audit compliance with operational procurement. And in that way, it will be more stronger. As I said, we've also aligned
with our BEE scorecard. We've got CIPOS recorded resource data here from the BEE. That's why they're here, because as you know, the big part in the BEE now is supply development and procurement. It's a compulsory element now on the private sector as well. So we're aligning the BEE with this program as well. Honourable Chair, that's the presentation. Thank you very much.
Honourable members, here we are. I don't know if maybe from your department, DG, does anyone would like to make an input or addition before we can interact with the presentation.
The matter of emphasis, but local content is a game changer, and it's not only a supply chain policy issue. It's also having linkages with local economic development. We are working with all the three spheres of government to link local content to local economic development, like the supply of furniture. It's something that we can use to drive SMEs, you know, if provincial departments can move into transversal tenders, you know, instead of on their own buying furniture, but if as a province buy transversal or finish us through transversal contract, then we can drive local furniture manufacturers. Same with textile and finish, because and that's the opportunity we are seeking. Also with rail, I mean it's an opportunity to create jobs directly through the value chain and also indirectly through, you know, the supplying of components. And we appreciate what Transnet has done, you know, to approach the DTI to buy locally commodities which are not yet designated, because as the DG has said, Regulation 9.3 gives them the opportunity to do that. And then overall, we have the 75% local procurement target. Now, without instruments to support that target, is going to be difficult. See, with local content, it's very clear. All bidders must pass the first set of local manufacturer. Then we'll consider other local procurement objectives like triple BE and the price. But if we don't have conditions, everything will be evaluated through the price and the WPE, which makes it difficult to reach the certain target. So it's moving forward. It's something that we want to work on, and we of the view that regulation and is important to achieve that objective.
Thank you. We now open the floor for discussions, and then start taking questions, input, if there is a start seeking question, you'll note it and then respond at the end of the page. But if it's an input, all of us will discuss. Honorable Mazoni, you are the first, and then you will be followed by Honorable Luyenge. Honorable Sayed will also follow. That I indicated earlier on, this is a brainstorming session. I would say comrades from media, they should also participate, because this affects all of us. You are most welcome to give your input in this meeting. It's a different type of portfolio committee meeting today. Thank you.
Chair, may I say how welcome this different kind of portfolio committee meeting is? Because I think the only way to make a successful country is when we all add to the brain pot and come up with solutions together. Chair, I'm incredibly pleased to hear about and DGI's enthusiasm at the amount of skill and the amount of possibilities we have as South Africans. Because I'm firmly of the belief that as South Africans, we have endless possibility. We have endless talent, endless possibility. And I think we could be one of the greatest nations in terms of skills development and in terms of becoming an industrial country in the world. We have the world's not wasted. We have everything. From our mineral resources to our brain power to our kind of people, we have the winning recipe. It's just about putting the right ingredients together to make things happen. What disturbs me, and maybe ETI and DPE can come in and explain this, is that we seem to, when we procure things, we seem to be procuring from the same companies all the time. And sometimes we seem to be hitting our head against a brick wall. And, for example, you know, we went to Majuki power station, and we did oversight there. And specific mention was made of boilers. Now, Majuki is a perfect example of where a boiler contract went incredibly wrong. And it could have gone the opposite way. And then it was surrounded by controversy, and it was surrounded by scandal, and the courts are involved, and it's a bit of a mess. Well, it's more than a bit of a mess. It's a serious mess. And companies that were involved there, I see, again, we're incorporating them perhaps not in the same mode, but we use the companies over and over and over again, even though we have situations where the companies come in and it actually has to be fired from the project and a new company come in to take over and fix the problem. So from DPI's perspective, at what point do we stop and do we say, look, we've used this company once, twice, and things just haven't worked. We need to start moving away from this company. And my suggestion would be that we need to really open up our tender processes, make our tender process, our procurement processes a lot more transparent. DPE is one of our portfolio committee has constantly called for our procurement and tender processes to be more transparent. And we always get the same answer. We get told these things are commercially sensitive. Well, yes, they are commercially sensitive. But, you know, when you're dealing with state-owned entities, these are entities that are owned by South Africans. So transparency is of the utmost importance because they're not a private company. They're a South African company. And we should know we're getting bang for our buck. And oftentimes, you know, when we want to do things locally, we get told, you know, the local company costs more than the import company. And many times there'll be a very good reason for that. It's because the external company has a lot lower labor cost than we have and can produce on mass and they're importing on mass, etc. But there's no transparency around it. And that's what creates the sense of negativity. And with that sense of negativity, Chair, also comes the red tape that's involved in establishing small and medium enterprises, which we as a country should be encouraging. To start a business in South Africa is incredibly difficult. There's a huge amount of red tape that goes around it, and even the tender processing, to submit a tender, it's an incredibly difficult process. And I think that DTI, together with public enterprises, should embark on almost a skills training course to small and medium enterprises as to how to get around this red tape and how to put your tender documents together. Because I think a lot of companies are missing out because they're not putting their tender documents together properly because they just don't know how to do it. And again, I say this because we keep using the same companies over and over again. And then, Chair, just for clarity's sake, in terms of, we say, and I use Transnet because the example that's been given us here, that the locomotives are being assembled. Are we importing all of those parts and just doing the assembly here, or are we doing are we actually doing the actual manufacturing in our country and then assembling it? Because there's no reason we shouldn't be doing everything in this country and creating double the amount of jobs. If there's one thing that we need in this country, it's more jobs. And Chair, DTI as well. We need to start, one of the things, and I go back to the boiler, one of the things that astounded me at Majupi and Kofir was the fact that we had to import coated welders into our country. Now, to become a coated welder is an artisan skill. And for some reason, children today just don't want to be artisans.
I remember when I was at school, a friend of mine said to me, what are you going to be when you grow up? And I said, well, I hope I'm going to be a politician. I said, and you? He said, I think I want to be a plumber. And I remember thinking, that doesn't sound like a very nice job. I see a particular friend of mine now. And he's the one driving a Mercedes, and he's got a very successful company, and he employs over 150 South Africans. And he's a true success story. Because he was someone who didn't look at plumbing and he's like, oh, I don't feel like I'm blocking a drain. He saw potential in creating a business and also growing his community around it. But if I think about myself, I wanted to go to university and carry a briefcase and wear high heels, you know, because for me, being a plumber wasn't appealing. And I think that's the problem with young South Africans, is that his arts and skills are just not appealing enough. And I think that when young South Africans realize what a hunger there is for artisans in our country, what a lack there is of artisans in our country. Because I think it's fair to say, we've got enough lawyers. You know, we've got enough people in corporate. We need people who are actually going to go and build things. And you know, little boys and little girls must get excited about building trains and about building aeroplanes and about building cars. This must become an exciting project again for kids. And it goes down to education. And it's up to us as departments of trade and industry, departments of public enterprise, education department, all of us to take hands and make sure that we build up a country of entrepreneurs, of artisans, and bring back these skills that are so desperate. Because how many times we hear even things like tiles. Now, I come from an Italian background. You know, and everyone will tell you, oh, the best tiles in the world come from Italy. In Italy, it's a great honor your family if you have someone that's an artisan in making tiles. And that's what should be in South Africa too. We should look at artisans and hold them in high esteem. Because it's great training that they have. And we should be encouraging this training. And we should be encouraging people to create their own businesses by cutting the red tape that's surrounded by business. And most importantly, have someone like the Department of Public Enterprise encourage these emerging small businesses to come and do a tender and explain so that it's not just the Alstoms and the Hitachis that are getting these contracts, but new emerging South African entrepreneurs. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Chairperson. I don't understand the way I listened today. You know, the previous speaker has covered me to a large extent, and I don't understand why. And I want to appreciate really his latter part of her presentation, Honorable Mazoni here, as it relates to skills development, empowering the SMEs. Once you refer to that, you are referring to the group. As a rural boy here from Cape Town, if we are talking about all these fancy terms that apply to those who have, and then they have not mentioned, then there is a problem. I think Chairperson here, this is a realization of what the President in his State of the Nation address as it relates to the localization content being prioritized. This kind of application and the simplification that we are receiving, you know, say from change, DG from the Nation. No, you are now right. Well, you are also from the CI. So he has simplified the concept of manufacturing by those, you know, who are masses. Because once you talk of furniture, you talk of something that is good day around. But we don't know how best can we participate at that level. So maybe the involvement of the provincial governments, in order that the municipalities can also be on board. We have a responsibility about Honorable Mazoni that we champion this kind of a relationship that is needed to realize this, because provinces must take part. Provinces must be part of this. UDTI or RDT is a program of textile and development industrialization kind of in Vulindlela in Mthatha. It's real. I asked the street in the street number and the list, and then they told me I went there. And now it tells me today that there is 22 million, you know, investment that DTI has done. And I wanted to check now, where is that 22 million? Is it is it a commitment or it has been transferred? Because when I do my conference work, I want to go to the mayor and ask us whereabouts is the 22 million. If it is on the road, I must see the kind of road that has been done. If it is street lights, because we must be real, because things are happening now. And as things are happening, we must be able to say to our young people, it's not necessary for all of you to be teachers, nurses, and doctors. You must take this route. So they won't be interested if there is nothing happening. Now that we see that there is some ground that has been covered by the department, we must be there. The public-private partnerships in this, in order to fight this xenophobic attacks in our country. You know, these brothers and sisters of us from the other countries of Africa, they have kids. If we can partner with them, with our own communities, and then we enter into a private partnership with government, we get our own training as well as getting the appropriate knowledge that they have. And then we see how best can we move forward. So I want to maybe check the issue that relates to this supply chain. Yes, right, to that. The establishment of community cooperatives vis-a-vis the supply chain processes. Well, I need clarity on that. Because there is no point of us, you know, hearing about understanding on infrastructure and related programs. I mean, that is not up to scratch. If it was a notion of say there is lack of infrastructural allocation, now it is understanding, right? Then you begin to say, what is wrong now in our bureaucracy? What made people not to spend when people want work? So in the name of job creation, in the name of empowering our own people, brightening the future of our country, we need to support these kinds of initiatives and be closer individually or collectively as public representatives here, Honorable Zuko. We need to make sure that we know where is the DTI office in Islam. It must be the first point that I must visit to say, I have a presentation here, there is this thing happening. Thanks, sir.
Hello,
Mr.
I want to go back to the issues that have been raised already in relation to procurement. Because while VG was doing a presentation, I also kept on asking myself, while you were talking about your 60% score for attempt to proceed to the next evaluation process, so I kept on asking myself, if I'm a service provider somewhere in Mzumgale, in the district of Bembeze in the Pope, how do I know this kind of information so that I'm then able to participate and try and assist government to grow the economy as required? But I think the two clear features affect as well. It's an issue that we might definitely need a response for. But you see, your slide that you presented that was giving us an idea in terms of how the sectors were performing from 1994 to 2013.
agri, the area of mining, agriculture that the those sectors are doing extremely well. But I begin worried in the area of manufacturing, because that slide talks about almost a decline by 50%, 20.9, 1994 to 11.6 by 2030, and which to me became a bit of a worrisome situation, because if we have strategies to deal with this particular issue, definitely it will go a long way in assisting us in the area of job creation. And the question becomes, in your analysis, why this kind of a situation, especially in the area of manufacturing? Because to me, I thought in one area that is doing quite well since 1994, but from the presentation I can see the decline by almost half, 50%, which is a very serious situation. The second last one is there was a slide that you did not necessarily present in some detail, if you remember, with 65,000 job creation direct and indirect. You did not necessarily go in detail on top of that slide. The question that came to my mind was, what has been the target? Especially in the area of your specialization, which resulted in us being at 65%. I don't remember by when, but like I said, there's one side that you didn't necessarily present, you jammed it, but you might definitely need clarity. Just for us to have an idea, how are we doing in the area of job creation? What's the target that government has set? The last one relates to recommendations of the Presidential Review Commission of State-Owned Companies. I would appreciate if you are then able to brief us in terms of the issues that relate to your area of specialization. What progress has been made in relation to us implementing those recommendations? Let me pause.
Yes, supporting local and buying local, absolutely great. And yes, bulk purchases of items within South Africa will bring down the cost. But in terms of designation, I'm a little concerned about its restriction on competition. Now, is there provision for the designation? For example, if local supply runs out or it becomes too expensive, do you have the possibility to designate an industry to allow for, you know, certain industries to continue and with the import of global goods? And yes, I hear about, you know, certain provinces agreeing to buy, you know, all of the furniture for all of the municipalities or whatever that fall within its region. But if there's, for example, 100% designation for local, or a province has to buy all of the furniture for all of the government departments and municipalities within a province, then you risk price fixing because there's no external competition. So as soon as something is 100% designated, then people can funkle and, you know, things start getting a little bit shady. So I certainly wouldn't ever like to see anything more than a 70-city or whatever, that we're still supporting local and emphasizing local and growing local, but losing that competition element, it will be to our own detriment. So those are the first 2 points. The third point is that, sir, despite my honourable colleague mentioning the success of mining, you started out saying that the whole mining sector is a decline, and we see that, the job losses, the mines closing down, etc. Now, Alex Core happens to be the state-owned company that, you know, mines diamonds, etc. It used to be quite viable, however, now its yield is quite low. So, in terms of DPE and DTI, is state ownership and investment in a mine like that, where we're not sure whether it's still meeting its commercial and developmental mandate, especially if there's no localization and beneficiation. And in light of what the President and Mr. Gordhan have said, would it be better to sit and invest elsewhere, or what are the proposals in terms of ensuring that the little yield that is coming out of this, at least, for example, manufactured into finished goods, what are the opportunities there? Because we know we have so many state-owned companies, and Alex calls a prime example, you know, yes, we've got to sell them or merge some of them, but in those that aren't performing, what added options are there to ensure localization and differentiation? Thank you.
Honorable Renzo.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, let me also welcome the presentation by DTI and the and the roles they are playing in boosting the economy of the country. You know, Chair, I'm from Eastern Cape, and I am, my town is along the Orange Ridge. I in the same town we have a huge area that I think it needs attention from both DTI and Economic Development Department. It has a huge potential economy in that area. It's a dry area. You might not find anything, but you find water. We were in a situation at the beginning of the year where there was no water, but the majority of our water was redirected to farm. That is why we had a dry river. Okay, I think we have a problem of not using our own resources that we have in the country. As much as we are speaking about localization, we might be speaking about localization in manufacturing, but if we do not use our own resources, because I think for us to develop this country economically and otherwise, it's for us to look at the resources that we have. As the honourable members or my colleagues have spoken about the resources that we have as a country. We are talking about having manufacturing factories or factories around the country that we think we will open up. But I think for as long as we are still looking something that comes from other countries, we are still not going to go anywhere. I once said, Chair, when I was in the NCOP last term, before we build a school in an area, we should look if we had a math school in that area, and there are children that are still going to that math school, and teachers are there, do we really still need to build a school in that area? Because we are building things in areas where there is no one. And after that, they just stand there as white elephants. Meanwhile, we were saying we are trying to boost that area. After doing a huge job that thing just becomes a failure. I think we need to have skilled people who are able to survey an area and get to know the potential that will come out of that. To me, that's where we say as government. Because if we say there is a need of a school expedition because there were no school expedition, how many people are staying in expedition right now? How many have moved out of expedition? But because we aimed before 1994, or the people of expedition before 1994 wanted a school, we go and place a school there that is going to be a white elephant. I think we need to check really as much as we are saying we are doing. We are doing good in many areas, but also we must not waste resources. Check under youth employment. You know, we the president in the State of the Nation address, I think, he spoke about 15.3 million people that are employed. We are seated with 8 something million that are unemployed that we always hear about. I've never counted them. I don't know how many are there. But we always hear about 8 something million people that are employed. Do we really in real terms have the 15.3 million employed people? Can we go to can we really say these people are here, young people that are being employed, and are employed between this period of 1994 up until 2016? Are they really there, or do we just take it out of, because the president is referred by information by the department, and he will not be everywhere. I can't go on when I can sort of manage everywhere, but he is fed by the department. Do we really make an impact on the ground, or we come sucking all these things when we report? The monitoring systems that we have in place, are they working? We've got so many SMEs that are failing us, and that are failing into their jobs because of the lack of skills. But we know what skills do we expect from them. Our monitoring system is still working for its work before, but now in the present present situation, do we still have the lender? Do we still have? Do we still need the type of monitoring system that we have? Do we still need it, or do we need to improve it? Because for me, I think we need to improve on our monitoring system. If we don't have people to monitor what is happening, it doesn't matter how much money do we put in those SMEs. If they are not monitored, they are not skilled enough, I don't think we will go anywhere. The last point that worries me is the coordination or the alignment of the 9-point plan to the MDP, and also what was this KPI or whatever. We really do we see in this department good KPI, and the department attached to you, do we see it working, that the 9-point plan working towards the goal of the MDP, or are we still struggling to align the two? Thank you, sir.
Like I said earlier on, it's an open discussion. The Department of Public Enterprise is also here. ESCOM is here. CIRC, FIR is here. Journalists are here. So let's talk.
Thank you.
looks like nobody's ready to talk. Only politicians who are doing the talking.
I'm only a CEO. So from my side, I'd love to have our scientists or our engineers or some of our executives to come and present and tell you about the work that they do to support the initiatives that the department has just presented on, especially in the locomotive sector with transport. As I said earlier on, we've got a building in the Sierra Art campus that is dedicated to Transnet. And also we are part of the National Foundry Network. And we're also doing work in the aerospace industry for Airbus. And we also have an implementation unit at the CSIR, which actually takes the work, the output, the research and development output from the work of the scientists and putting it into practice. So there's one example, a company, this, I'll call it a black industrialist company called Sinjana Engineering, somewhere in Victoria, and it operates within the defense industry. So, but I'm not the one to present such work. Our executives or scientists and engineers could come to a committee if invited. So, as you know, I did get press here this morning. So, if we can be given that opportunity, we'll come and present. Probably with Transnet and other enterprises that we work with, like Eskom and others. Thank you.
We need to narrow our discussions. In their presentation, they pointed three main challenges which impede the real localization. They said state-owned enterprises have not been able to adequately invest in infrastructure. They also mentioned the issue of administrative costs, like your costs, in the menu of costs, which they say are the highest in the world. You remember when we met with the Growers Association, they also mentioned the issue of costs, and it also comes here again. They also mentioned the issues of electricity. Unfortunately, Eskom is here, but Transnet is not here. You can say, what are they doing? Oh, they are here. Oh, okay. So these are the issues which they highlighted. And then other issues relate to the legislation. They spoke about what they call in America the Buy American Act, which we don't have in South Africa. It's just free. You speak of localization, but if there's no legislation to enforce, then it's just something else. We have the department here, though it's not a policy department, but they can share with us around the issues which were raised by this. I think if we can narrow our discussion here, then we can come up with maybe something. Honourable Senator, you want to?
Yes, Chair. Sorry, it's just while that gentleman was talking about black industrialists and things like that. You know, I hear politicians in the House, government officials saying, we need BEE, we need more black industrialists, we need more skills development. Yes, we do. But are the departments responsible for facilitating that actually doing enough? I don't think so, because you and I, we can sit here and tell and say exactly how many black industrialists we would like and all of the wonderful stories that we heard today about people who have made a success out of their lives. And yes, we want that to happen for the 8.3 million unemployed in this country, but how many times are we going to say in this room, we want black industrialists, we want BEE, we need skills development. But talking about it isn't going to help. And DPE and DDI are not going to sort it out on their own. This is a macro issue. And DPE and DDI, and unfortunately, the state-owned entities with their commercial and developmental mandates, I don't think they're doing enough, because it should be almost a 60-40 split. You commercially viable 60% and 40% you go. Don't quit me on that. But I'm just saying, I don't think that there's enough in the developmental. And perhaps that's an assessment we need to do, Chair, is as much as we push companies to be profitable, sustainable, absolutely, but I think we also need to check, are they doing enough to invest in infrastructure? And when they come and tell us how many, you know, people they've had in their little training programs, and we hear a good stock, we heard Transnet about, was it Transnet? Yes. About that new centralized, what was it called? Yes, thank you, ma'am. The Enterprise Development Hub, and there's one that's coming into our province, Honourable Zato. So, you know, it's all very well, you hear these good stories, but there aren't enough. Are we taking the development of black industrialists, of skill development seriously enough? Are we putting our money where our mouth is, or is this going to be another thing where, oh, we've got this problem? And next year we'll be sitting in the same committee, Jefferson, and we'll say, oh, we've got this problem. And in 10 years' time we'll be sitting here and saying, oh, we've got this problem. So, I personally would like actually to do a review, somehow, an interrogation, get a report, and say, are the state-owned companies, which are supposed to be the drivers of economic growth, have the commercial and developmental mandate, are they doing enough? And especially, like I said, it's not DPE, it's not DTI alone. Education, basic education, tertiary education. My colleague says that all those welders had to be imported. Why haven't we aligned our education structures with the skills development requirements of this country? Do we know where we're going? And what do we need to get there? And we need to streamline, you know? So I want to know more of that, but I think it's more talk than action, Jay. Gigi?
Well, thank you very much, Chair. As you've outlined that, actually, this is a meeting that is more broader. It requires more broader thinking by throwing things in the pot. But I thought also it's important to outline a few things also, just to clarify where there were questions. I think questions that relate to the presentation will be dealt with by my colleague, DJ Duchar. But I think what I like about the conversation today, Jefferson, it more or less paraphrases and it emphasizes the importance of state-owned companies, that they are extremely important to drive development. I think that is a very important notion which I seem to be getting across there. That appreciation and the presentation made by DJ October emphasizes how important it is for us to industrialize because of their size, their ability, without necessary, because when it is a private company, it is rushed by the profit motive and the interest of the shareholders and all that. So sometimes the timelines are too short. But to drive the developmental agenda, it needs a long-term perspective. Now, I'll come back to this by citing this particular example, that the BUILD program has taught us lessons. And I'll also go back to the issue of NEDU as an example, for instance. We achieve a sizable employment in the area. We derive benefits of local economic development where in the parliament, if you go there, there is a completely different scenario in terms of development. But now we know that for the next cycle of the BUILD program, the batch of the fuels that have been developed out of Midwood are going to be utilized going forward. So, and naturally, that's how you do a skills development program. Because practice is so important, particularly with accidents. Yes, we imported accidents. But coupled with the importation, there was a parallel program of skills development. Well, as you name that. And I think where it is necessary also, we should invite the community to visit those times. Where it is good to see young people who have just finished, who have gone to school. Some of them, of course, may have not done medical, completed the degree, but they have an opportunity. They've gone through different types of anti-stability development. Transnet ran that program also in full score, where you realize that there's a match. And most of those are also not only trained for Transnet or for ESCO. They are also released into the open market to save other products. So, in reality, I'm outlining here that we have drawn there, but we know that if another new build program starts, we already have that capacity of assistance who have been trained, who will be ready to be dispatched. So, the importation of assistance would not be a consideration going forward. I think it's one hard that we must outline as an achievement out of the issue to set the standard. There's a second issue around there was a question around Alesco, the mining company. The issue of privatization around it and all that. I just want to outline one important issue, is that through risk fishing, the community is the core owner of the resource. And I'm just highlighting this part to say we need to get to a year of understanding private sector to that extent that in that situation the ownership is not only the state, it's the state and the community, which is the people. Now we must more or less attune ourselves to also focus on a program of preparing the community to understand how to participate in an economy and manage the resource that is there without necessarily depleting. So it's another avenue that probably we are putting together and working very hard to ensure together with the rural development to make sure that the legislative instruments are refined to support the community so that they are not hijacked. And over and above that, to ensure that there is also skills development locally through voluntary programs and all that, to make sure that the local young people become active participants in those businesses. I think the same will apply to SAFCO, because about 5% of the land where SAFCO is built is also under landscape. Go for the future. So that's another important task I think that we need. So the discussion around cooperatives should not die, because cooperatives are here in ensuring that the broader community can be brought on board to co-participate in an economic space with broader benefit to the community. So, and these things, it's not like they have not happened elsewhere. Most of South African companies were originally cooperative before 1994. And some of them, after 1994, they transformed to become private companies. So, this more or less sticks as an art development, which we must hold. And if we skip certain steps, definitely certain things would not come right, even if we wish to. So taking community along in a part of development, it is very, very important. I think another issue, Chairperson, comes through to local economic development as an issue. In the last presentation, I highlighted that one thing we are beginning to do in DP now, take our state-owned companies, the fish that we have, we take them not on a roadshow, but on a permanent engagement with provincial departments and municipalities, so that we streamline the plan, so they already have long-term plans. Now, we are more or less taking those plans and putting them on the table of the provincial departments and saying, in the next 10 years, we'll be building a port of technology. Now, every province, what are you doing to make sure that with the limited resources that you have, you direct your plans towards those areas, so that you do not have a situation of schools that are built and becoming like elephants? Because naturally, are likely to migrate to a new center of development. So if that port is likely to become a vehicle of hope and development, it tells that people will gravitate to that direction. So then human settlement programs, infrastructure programs, should all be funneled to supporting that area. Because it's only natural that rural areas of the future would become towns. And if we do not place our thoughts in that space and determine it now, we would then always have a situation of communities that could not sustain itself. So we are engaging them, but at the same time, we are bringing with us the skills that our state-owned companies have in terms of planning skills, the very discussion around skill development. So, you cannot be hoping to build a port and you are not developing young people around those areas with the right skills of welders and all those that will be required when the program starts. So we are already engaging with provinces along those lines. So we are more or less at GPE. We are taking an enterprise route to say it's not about state-owned companies doing business purely for profit. No. But it's also more than about that. It's for them to provide the services that they have been created for, a catalyst of development. Then, the private sector, when those things have happened, the private sector will automatically thrive. And also, probably also adding on what DG October was talking about, on localization. What is really key and very important with localization is that if you do not become very strict and enforce to ensure that it happens, you will be faced with a situation where other economies have advanced to a certain level of scale. By then, it means that they have reached a point where they were able to reduce their costs to minimum level. Now, when you start, it's only normal that your product would not be at the same price competitiveness as those that have been in the developmental part for over 100 years. So you have to protect your local industry and nurture it to a level where it is on its own feet and it is able to, because the economy will not thrive if there is no circulation of income. And that comes out of local job creation processes. So we must see this entire thing as a cycle of life. That if you do not pay school fees to make sure certain things happen, if you do not become also to ensure that certain things happen, the other outcome will never be achieved. So I think that those are the few things that I needed to talk about. The legislation part, I think it might also require us to engage even much more further. Because it's cut across many other things. Maybe on that one, let me pause for it for now, and then we will continue. And I think I would wish, Chairperson, that the representatives of Transnet and ESCOM could also more or less give figures of skill development initiatives that are happening now, and I think in the outer years, because they've got plans for the future, and what they intend to do. So we have received several reports on those. On the future plan. And I think that will also more or less give us a better clarity. But what the part that we achieved, I think the last part here, is that how we relate with our trade partners is also very important. It's important in such a way that the OEMs naturally, they would want to continue to be in business. So it's never easy for them to give you everything. So what did you October outline there, say that we build a base of experience on our on particularly the locomotive program, well, it was not easy. Even now, it is not easy because nobody would want you to replace him in a short while. So it's a very difficult process. But these regulations that he is talking about are more or less assisting us going forward to negotiate better. Because once they know that there's an envelope that is not projecting what we're trying to do, they would always want to exploit it. So I think that's a part I also need to say. Thank you very much, sir.
Moving forward, the DTI emphasizes the issue of infrastructure, investment in infrastructure. Now, as you are preparing for the shareholder compact, which we have been waiting, will you be able to be specific on targets to say Transnet in Saldanha Bay, you are rehabilitating the ship, whatever, the PEP, what do they call the PEP? Yeah, bad or the bad years. Because of the shell gas and oil which will be happening there. In terms of infrastructure, we want to see maybe two in the next medium term. You go to ESCO to say we do be a conceal are on course. In 2 years this is what we want to see happen. You go to which one? Circle. The land as well to say we want to see this major big infrastructure project in the next, maybe two of them in the next MTM period. Are you looking towards that direction, DG?
Well, Chair, ideally that's what we are looking at. But we do so, which is another part where we have to engage with all other parties involved. That's why this meeting today is also very important. Let me highlight it from this end. There has been capitalization of, let me cite an example from Transnet side. There has been massive investment over the years. Right now, we are faced with the commodity class, where you realize that if Transnet is to continue investing in other investments that were planned, and there is no revenue to be supporting that particular investment, now you end up with a waste of a resource, and you are having a debt that's a burden that you are supposed to save. Because we should also bear in mind that we're not just investing with our own money, it's like the borrowed money. So that, I'm just citing that as an example to say we are engaging with them in terms of the shareholder compact, but looking also at these dynamics, because they are saying, look, we may not necessarily continue with other investments, we have to slow down because our revenue stream is starting to increase. And over and above that, there is also, they have to carry and subsidize private sector because there is congestion, because most of them are having a difficulty. So they have to renegotiate to say, no, we can no longer pay at this particular level. So I'm just saying, much as we are going that route, we're also looking at the dynamic. But as the VGI is saying, we are looking at development in that area, in terms of manufacturing investment. Then, where there is infrastructure support for that, that when then we will be exercising to say, we need that particular infrastructure to support these other initiatives that are done by our other partners. So that's what the work that will be happening at the plant site. And it will inform how we change the shareholder content going forward.
Thank you, Chair. I would just like to take the opportunity to add to what the DG has said with regard to investment, and also in appreciating the presentation that has been made by DTI and the information that has been provided. Maybe if I could start by saying that I do have a suggestion, Chair, for the PC over and above what the Chair has already suggested, that DPE must come back to the portfolio committee with. Latching on to the challenges that you have mentioned, that DTI had mentioned in the presentation about the high court costs under investment and so on, whilst those things affect you, I don't think that we have been able to provide the context as to why we are in the situation. And I feel like we would be taking away from what the focus of this presentation is today. We have to dwell on that. So I would like to suggest that next time we come to the portfolio committee with responding to your request, we also add to those contexts, because sitting here, I'm sure the portfolio committee is wondering, but this is what DPE has already said Transnet is doing, Eskom is doing, and they've presented these large fields of investment that are happening in the SOCs and so on. So how does this fit in with the facts that have been laid on the table today about other underinvestments and so on? Pot prices as well. Why is it that we find ourselves in the situation today? Taking into consideration the fact that our pots have been compared with pots all over the world, of which some are funded by their government. So we need to be able to understand those contexts. We need to also understand the initiatives that the SOCs have taken in terms of skills development and so on. As much as to some eyes, they could seem to be the problem. Bottom line is that we need to start somewhere. DG has alluded to the fact of some of the learnings that have come out of MeDoV and other mega projects. The fact of the situation is that as a country, for a very long time, we have not been invested in these mega projects. As a result, we have lost those skills. And we have to start somewhere in terms of developing those skills. And part of it is obviously to import some of the skills. But most definitely, there is concerted efforts to make sure that we develop the skills, we beneficiate, and so on. And we would most definitely like to see more beneficiated products going out of the country. So those are the few comments, Chair, that I would have liked to make, but also to emphasize the fact that we appreciate the support the DTI is providing to the economy with all of the incentives that are being put on the table and so on. But we've also suggested that we need to, and especially looking at the efforts that are being made by the SOCs. I mean, I was asking myself the question when I was looking at the investment. As much as it's a policy decision that government has taken that SOCs should invest in infrastructure and so on and so on, I've also asked myself the question, what is the equivalent of private sector investment in the country throughout the year? How does it compare with the SOCs? And I think it's something that we need to be looking into as well. And the question then becomes, what more support, and especially now that the country is looking into strengthening the SOCs, much as we provide support to the private sector as an example, what type of support do we also give to SOCs? Not funding, but certain incentives that private sector is exposed to, that SOCs are not exposed to, for us to be able to work together as part of this private sector participation initiative. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Khomso. When I was raising the issue of your suggestion would be to have another session where we'll be able to analyze why are we not investing enough adequately, why are we not investing adequately in the SOEs in terms of infrastructure. I was trying to use the example he made, DG, saying just create industry like they are advising the steel industry, which is in Germany. That's a good investment. It's infrastructure which we need. So the department, when I was saying the shareholder, I was saying the department should also look into
what is it, what industries can we invest in? You know, just to stimulate the economy. But that kind of discussion, I think in a way it will help. Why are we not adequately investing in the SOEs, taking into the global market as well, competitiveness and so on, commodity prices? It will also understand, it will help us to understand as well. But your input is really appreciated. Let me take a little. Didi wants to respond. Before you respond, I want to go right the back, and then Honorable Spender will come, and then the official forum.
Thank you, Chair. Welcome the presentation made by the DTR. Especially the comments that were made with regard to some of the procurement that could have been done locally. For instance, there was reference to the arms procurement, the strategic defense packages, that we imported products from overseas that actually ended up boosting jobs and towns in those parts of the world. For instance, the hog, RAF in northern part of England, was given a kickstart and shipping with regard to the Corinthians. We need to be doing the same things in this country. And those kinds that I've mentioned are actually outside the major centers. And that's something this kind that we need to address in terms of how do we take manufacturing to smaller towns so that we can create jobs in those areas. The comments that have been made by DTR with regard to the procurement leverage programs is also accepted. But the most potent tool we have among these is definitely designation. And the list that was presented here, we need to definitely work together with DTI to ensure that it is lengthened. Because this is definitely our economy is very much capable of producing more than what has been stated there. And we have started discussions with DTI to formalize our relationships, because I think that we have been working through forums like economic cluster. We sit on some of their farms, but we have not formalized the relationships in order to ensure that we get the biggest value out of the SOCs that are within the state portfolio. Chair, the point that I would like to make is that if you are going to go to further boost to local production and ensure that our SOCs and other local entities move in the direction of becoming original equipment manufacturers, as this was stated by DDR, we need to look at research and development spend in this country. I don't think enough attention is being placed in that particular direction. It's a good thing that CSR is also present here, because I'm sure they can help out a bit in terms of indicating how much is spending in that particular area. With regard to SOCs, we need to also look at the incentives. How we utilize the incentives? Where are these incentives going? Because the state-owned companies are unable to access these incentives. And the one part that is not here and that's been mentioned even in the DTI presentation is National Treasury. They are proving to be quite a major stumbling block in achieving some of these objectives that have been mentioned here. The designation is obviously with regard to designation, the role that they are playing that can be optimized. But I also want to say that on the incentive they can do more. On our side, recognition of the world-class capability that is within the now. Let's try to assess manufacturing, the MC, manufacturing competitiveness incentive, in order to help them to invest in their capabilities. Because in some of the factories, the equipment is from the 1940s, and if we were to update that equipment, we'd be able to boost export production, export sales to beyond the 50% that they're now achieving, which obviously helps us in maintaining jobs here, and also helps us in ensuring that we generate IP in this country, which becomes the basis for the OEM status that the NEL holds in certain product lines. Chair, that is a contribution, and I'm hoping that the next time we meet, we shall have that particular party in this in the discussion. And when we come back again, we shall show between ourselves this year what have we achieved, ensuring a closer cooperation with regard to our six SOCs. But also we should also not forget that the 21 profit-driven SOCs in our portfolio, we also need to see what can we do to leverage that capability. Thank you.
So this incentives, the which ones are you talking about? The job creation incentives, the SOCs, they don't get.
Yeah, I'm sure DTI can expand on that. Definitely, these are the specific one. I think SAMHSA, that's what it's called. We try to get our SOCs to have access to it. Yeah, it has been said, but nothing. That's for the private sector, not for the state owned company.
That's the issue we need to know as a portfolio committee, honorable members. Dizzy, before you respond for other members, you didn't say to us why National Treasury is not able to designate more. You didn't yeah, to certain sectors or programs. You didn't say to us, because it is also important so that we understand if maybe what are the limitations. Honorable members, Honorable Mazzoni, Honorable Teddy, Honorable Kwangwa, in that order. Oh, I thought we are the federal leaders. And I will start with you before Honorable Mazzoni, and then she will follow you. Honorable Kwangwa will follow, and Honorable Teddy. And we are almost after 12, we need to finish at 12:30. I just raise this so that we mind our input.
Thank you, Chair. Once again, linking to what I said about, I said earlier about talking in circles. I don't, and with due respect, I don't see the purpose of getting a presentation on why we are where we are. We know why we are. We had a history of apartheid where there was huge inequality that was created by disproportionate investments and things like that. We know that. We know that since 1994 that investment has not properly been invested in the right places and in the right ways, and money is often kept in certain circles so that there isn't beneficiation to the broad public. And we know that some mistakes have been made, like the closing of the teachers' colleges, the closing of the artisan colleges, those terrible terrible, but when those boundaries were recreated and a whole bunch of people just shoved there and government subsidized industry like in Dimbaza, the textile industry. And then government just put the subsidy and thousands of people went unemployed. So we know why we are where we are. But once again, it's no good talking about it. We know. We need to start finding solutions. And like you said, Madam Chair, we need to know what industry is going to be viable for South Africa so that we know where we want to align investment. But where are we going? Are we going NDP? Are we going NDR? Are we going this way or that way? Because that's exactly what we need, Madam Chair. We need to know where we're going, and we need to start getting honest and saying, is it education that needs to change? Is it state-owned enterprises that are actually going to make an impact? Because it's very nice talking, but we'll still be talking next year.
Talking one, we need to talk and get out of boardrooms and go and do the work. Less boardrooms, more on the ground. Honourable Mazzoni?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I do see benefit in talking. I think the problem is we hear what we want to hear, and we talk who we want to talk to, and that's where the problem comes in. But there is a big benefit in the sharing of ideas. Chair, I do want to emphasize this. I think one of the problems that we have to address, and it's the elephant in the room, is with public enterprises, the way we establish our public enterprises and the way we rotate management in our public enterprises. And I think it's fair to say, I mean, this isn't an opinion, this is fact. If one looks at, and I understand you talk about 21 public enterprises that are profitable. In DPE, we concentrate on six, and it's the big six to speak of. If you look at the boards of those particular entities, at some time or another, most of the board members have been on each one of the other boards, and most of the chair people have been chair people on one of the other boards. So it's also very interesting the way we rotate internally. That perhaps causes a stagnation of ideas because there's no new blood, so to speak, coming into the management of our big six. And I think that's problematic, Chair. And Chair, just my final point for today. I don't think we should demonize or National Treasury in too harsh a light. I think National Treasury is also stuck between a rock and a hard place. I think they have very little to work with at times. In terms of putting their budgets together, in terms of where they step in, where they don't step in, on whose toes they step on. And from a Department of Public Enterprises side, I think public enterprises have a lot to thank National Treasury for, especially in light of what happened last December, and in terms of having a National Treasury when the going got tough, National Treasury got going and put a stop to what could have been a catastrophic move for DPE and a public enterprise. And I think that I don't think it's very fair of us to sit here and criticise Treasury. Obviously, there's ways to improve everything, and we need to engage with them all the time. But I think that we shouldn't demonise National Treasury too much, especially when they're not here to answer to our questions.
Honorable Kwango.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. I think what is talked about though, in broad terms, of the state owned enterprises, we need to bear in mind that there's talk about rationalizing some of these state owned enterprises, right? So in developing a strategy or a way forward, we need to be aware as to which ones are not strategic according to government. Otherwise, we're going to sit here and try to crack our skulls, plan around certain state owned enterprises, and then in the future we're told that they are either partially restructured or completely privatized, which will cause some of us to learn it. So we need to be clear about what we want to. The second issue is, Honorable Standard mentioned it, talking about the manufacturing sector and what happened especially in the early 90s after we came through, and that we decided to remove some of the protection that they enjoy. But you know, when I looked at some of our trade agreements in this country, in particular China, I think it was entered into 2010, where we agreed that we're going to rebalance trade between two countries once. That we're going to try and get South Africa to move up the value chain. Right? But now look at what is happening. The demand for global commodities has actually come down. And instead of us actually being able to respond to that appropriately, we are caught unaware. Right, it's only now that we're saying maybe we should rebalance trade between, you know, us and our major trading partners because we're not getting value, obviously, from the commodities, maybe. Why have we taken forever to actually implement that? Why have we taken forever to start investing, especially, or making sure that we invest in our manufacturing sector so that by the time we rebalance trade opportunities such as this one, because even though, you know, global economic demand for commodities has gone down, there's an opportunity for us. It's an opportunity for us to start exporting other things rather than just natural resources. But it seems like we are caught unawares in this instance. I want to come back to the issue that Honorable Anto mentioned earlier, where we, for instance, build schools that become white elephants and so on, in the eastern Cape and other former rural province. Is there communication between some of these departments with the Department of Education when they try to do that? Because I agree entirely with what the Minister of Basic Education said two days ago. She said the problem with some problems like the Eastern Cape is that we have a lot of schools and a lot of small schools. As a result, they're in the process of trying to merge some of the schools. I'm saying if, for instance, a department or a state-owned enterprise wants to build a school, isn't it always important to consult the Department of Education so that you can know exactly what's going to happen and what plans are in place? But I think what the government keeps forgetting, or what is not talked about a lot, is that the reason why in some provinces such places are capable of a lot of schools is simply because the communities themselves actually built most of those schools. In my area, in my village, five of the six villages, actually, all the schools were built by the communities, by the villagers themselves. So if the government takes forever to respond, or sometimes the government takes forever to even communicate as to whether or as to what the plans are for the next year. For instance, let me give an example. When we visited some of the month schools last year, what we discovered is that the school principals were not even aware that there were plans to match their schools or there were plans to build their new schools. We had to communicate ourselves with the districts. And the district said, no, we communicate with them in due course. But what does due course mean? And now if you say you want to communicate with the district, because guess what happens? By the time you go to the school, the community has built its own school, another math school. Thank you.
There was an issue that we raised earlier with regard to progress in the implementation of the presidential review commission on SOCs. I appreciate the fact that we might not be having a report ready for now, but maybe Chair might want to suggest that the research support, we need a progress support in that area. Given the fact that the minority have been raised, knowing that these are some of the issues that we might want to cover. But the last one, at which stage, given all these very wonderful issues that we're talking about on the role of state-owned companies, at which stage do we have all these agencies under one roof and talk about these issues? Some of them sharing their frustrations, some of them that are performing very well, trying to share best practice. So that really, I know in public enterprises you will say we have a forum of chairpersons or CEOs and the like, but every state we have all these entities over and above those that report to either DTI and Parliament of Enterprises, and to talk about these issues that are raising, so that we're then able to learn from each other and see how best can we deal with some of the challenges that we are coming from. So the last one is in the form of a question. As I think, that one was just a comment in your proposal, which can then assist us going forward. So that it is as an oversight body, we know if there are difficulties in you trying to implement the recommendations of the Presidential Review Commission on Networks. Thank you.
Before we give this October to respond, Makolo, you were raising your hand. You're covered, but we want to hear something from you. You are declaring the privilege of talking. Chairperson, I think Arthur has already covered what I wanted to say. Thanks. Thank you, Makolo. Did you?
Chair, maybe I think thanks for the discussion. As I indicated, thanks for convening this very thoughtful discussion. I think to get to the heart of the matter then, which you said we should focus on, as you know, Tabogo said that localization can be the game changer for us to create SMEs and create jobs. So I would refer to you to Regulation 9.3. Could we get a firm commitment from the Big Six that three of the Preferential Procurement Act, which falls under National Treasury. In terms of that act, as I said, we've got a target of getting 70% in terms of government MTAF. We have to get 70% localization. Now, to get that target, what we want is that Transnet, Eskom, all the big, I don't know what you call it, Big Six, if all of them can say that 70% of the products that they procure will be local. Now, as you know, I think it's very important to understand the distinction between public procurement is public, but the people who supply the service is private. So as I explained, for example, all the municipalities, they control the tendering of the Rio Varia in my city. So it's one example by Cape Town City Council, by Tshwane Metropolitan, by Joburg Metro. So they buy those buses. So all they've done, and as I said, we've recreated every bus now of my city that you see on these roads. Every hurrying bus, every Rio Varia bus is bought locally. Now, and all of that came in post-2011. Everything before 2011 was imported. So it was a simple decision for the municipality to just make a decision, and I think we said, I'm supposed to go 60% local content for buses, or 80%. We said 80% of the bus must be procured locally. So you've created an entire private sector, and you've created the industrialists, because they make these buses. But they all work competitively, but they all of them must have 80% local content. So as I said, there's big competition, many people who are coming to the marketplace, both foreign and local companies are bidding for it. And we want that open competition. So as you said, there's foreign companies coming in, but they all have to do is buy local. They have to have that 80% local content. So it's a simple decision if we can get every SOE to apply the same principle. And then as I said, we can create those jobs immediately. On what you said, the key question was, why are we, I think the question is, why are we missing these opportunities? If I take the current example, as I said, in the U.S., the mining industry don't have a problem because their iron ore is used by American steel companies, and then they supply their Transnet. So you see the value chain in the U.S., from mining to manufacturing into Amtrak. Right. What happens in South Africa? We have in Kumba, we produce iron ore, the world's best class iron ore. It comes straight to the Sishen line by Transnet, world class, and we bring it to Saldanha and we export it to China. Exactly. So why? Because that, as I said, that is South Africa's colonial story. When people came here, they took the mines for export. Okay, so what we're saying now, currently the way to change it is simple. If we say, as I indicated to you, if we say every Medupi Kosini in the future must use South African steel, you solve the problem, then what will happen is now, Kumba, Kumba is in a crisis now because China is not buying that iron ore anymore. They would have that problem if they were supplying Mittal steel and Evra steel, which supplies that are waiting. So simple equation. We've got a crisis, we've got our mining crisis, we've got our steel industry in crisis, and we've got no infrastructure spend. So all I'm saying is, if on every construction project we say use local steel, we will change what you say immediately, because Kumba will no longer go down. Kumba will supply Mittal will be revived, Evra steel will be revived, and so on. So simple equation, if you use voluntary. And as I said, so that has been our problem of why we never got this right. And if I give a last example, which is SMMEs and can revive the entire Eastern Cape and all our forestry areas, is that call. The Bogan mentioned about furniture. If we just buy all our furniture locally and we have transversal contracts, we've got schools to produce, furniture needs wood, we've got the forestry sector. If we can revive the forestry sector, thousands of SMEs to make furniture, which we can do, and we supply all our local furniture. So we revive the Eastern Cape in terms of the big forest, which is unexploited, and so very labor intensive and so on. But as I said, the first decision you must make is the decision which every other country has made. It is, you must buy local. That is a simple one. And if we can just firmly have 9.3, have the big six to buy local. I'm telling you, we'll change that problem. As we said, since 1994, we've created 5 million jobs. We've done it because we've expanded the auto industry, the clothing, textile industry, and so on. But as you know, those sectors rely on, for example, Mercedes-Benz in London. They rely on the U.S. to buy those Mercedes-Benz. So that, and we've succeeded, we've built a world-class auto industry. But to complete the thing of 25% to 5% unemployment rate, you must also create demand in your own economy. We cannot just rely on China and America to buy our products. We must buy our own products. But we do the opposite. As I said, we'll miss hundreds of thousands of opportunities when we import this basic stuff like steel. Change, we have that simple decision we can say.
Now, the terminal of ETE, Public Enterprises, is it difficult to tell our SOEs to do what they did say? Is there any regulation which must be in place to enforce what we need?
Well, Chair, maybe let me say, before I put up this perspective, let me say my wish will take you through certain legalities, and then I can highlight the situation.
Chair, Chair, maybe first and foremost is to welcome what DG October is saying in terms of a direct engagement. Now, there has been a triple TSA forum since 2011 where we've been engaging between DTI, DPE, and National Data. Now, to sum the story in maybe and truncated chair is to say, when we requested that state-owned companies apply or comply with regulation 9, there were also challenges that came from other quarters, and one of them has been mentioned as competition, because one of the criticism was that you will be pushing state-owned companies not to comply with Section 207 of the Constitution, which calls for competitive, open, and fair, transparent process in procurement, aligned with the PFMA. And one of the proposals that we put on the table was that the PFMA already provides for deviation mechanisms. But maybe aligning the PFMA provisions, regulation, now, in a way that allows for preferential procurement without being circumvented the provisions of the Constitution. So I don't think what the DG is putting on the table is impossible. But also, maybe what also we need to is to engage between the two departments and the state-owned companies, because already Transnet is complying with some of the provisions of the regulation now. We need to start indicating that how we get there with some of the state-owned companies. But we also need to bring into account that there's always challenges on state-owned companies where they will be accused of not wanting to follow particular procurement process because they identify certain suppliers. But I think it's something that can be engaged in terms of finding other alternatives.
Yes, Chairperson. What we're trying to do is if we can have quite a number of state-owned companies doing what Transnet is doing. Now, because Transnet has sent us a request to use 9.3. So if we can increase the scale, have a demand in the country, that will assist us. It's within the Constitution. Issues around competition, police, we are working with the National Treasury, but together with the Competition Commission. I mean, competition issues are not only a problem of local content. We are saying even if we have designated the sector 100%, it's not limited only to South African companies. Foreign companies can participate in designated tenders, provided they have a manufacturing base. So it's an instrument as well for foreign direct investment. So we are dealing with competition. So competition issues relate to limited number of players, the likelihood of collusion and the setting up of price. So we need different instruments to deal, not necessarily public procurement. So our investors have less advanced this hope for
Transnet is already doing it.
Chair, I want to probably highlight that. You see, this is something that no one who loves this country can object. It's a path we have to follow. But what is important also is for us to understand that for certain industries you start somewhere, because there's quality issues, there's all these other things that in certain negotiations certain packages are negotiated different. I'm trying to explain that picture. But more importantly, I think all of us are supposed to support. I want to highlight another dimension that is very interesting, is the SAA, right? I like using typical examples that you see every day. You realize that SAA, here you will have also to share with flying locally, meaning that there will be a big building coming into Johannesburg, and the very same people will now move out of that into a small building, but in a smaller one, that takes them that case come out of seven. But you leave, SAA will leave here there 2 days, so, and it cuts. I'm just in this open, I'm trying to say, when you are dealing with matters of the economy, it should be broad. When you do certain regulations, apply them across the board, so that whatever you do, there is a pattern in terms of how you are developing the country. So in a broader sense of the word, where I see that, say, I think we will work together with the DTI, with the SOCs, where there are challenges, we'll always find one another, so that at the end of the day, there's no compromise on that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Didi. We haven't given a Transnet just to say a word or two, if there's a need or there's any. Eskom, you didn't say anything. Okay, let's allow them. Eskom and Transnet, 1 second, 2 words.
No, Madam Chair, I think the discussions have been very useful, and we've taken note of all the inputs from the various committee members as well as DDI. And I think Gigi from DDI summed this up. I think it's a case of if you love SA, this is not a path that we can afford to walk. And we're going to have to walk this path. Thank you.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I think from my side, we very much believe in the fact that localization and supply development is learning by doing kind of an exercise. So even with Section 9.3, we thought let's identify certain commodities and see which ones we can apply 9.3. And of course, we engaged the DTI, Seboko, and Tandi, and had discussions with them. And we showed them those commodities to say, this is what we think we can localize. So we are saying, obviously, we are not perfect, but as we are doing the supply development, we are doing, and we do welcome today's discussion, but of course, there's a lot of improvement also from our side that we can do. But we are very much committed to this supply development and localization. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We now come to the end of our meeting. But before we do the closing remarks, I just want to capture what we have discussed so that we don't leave it any open. You will correct me if we have some other points which are missing. In the main, we said the GPE should include in their shareholder compact the targets in relation to specific sectors of industry. And then we also said they should also engage with SOEs to list the products which must be 100% locally produced. And then we also discussed about submitting a list of products of all companies to National Treasury, which should be designated DG for local content. And then we also said in the next round of discussions the CSIR will come handy in terms of what are they doing to enhance the capacity of the SOE in terms of skills development, research programs, and so on. But how are you assisting them? Because all what we need is to make sure the SOE operates to their maximal production that we can see the results. These are the issues that I think were in the discussion in the main. Is there any other issue which is left out? Yes, Honourable Sun.
Madam Chair, I remember the management of SOEs.
Yes.
We brought up the management and how, you know, it's recycle, 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 whereas perhaps, you know, they need to into the management of the SOEs. Also to look at the 100% education and to ensure that doesn't you know, for the what is it, the local context minimum threshold?
Yes.
Did I say that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. That is. That the National Sugar we must submit list of products which are 100% local.
Only 100%?
Yeah.
For consideration?
For years. But if we're saying if there's a foreign company, it must also have the local shareholders or whatever you name them. We are not taking care for it. They must produce local. Yes. That's how we spoke of content. Whether it's shareholding or product, it must have local content. Comico, you're looking at me. Oh, okay. Yes, a lot of sense.
Paloma, I also remember that we said that we actually have to look whether SOCs are meeting their developmental mandates in terms of, you know, if we are saying that we've got skill shortages, infrastructure, and then are they viable? Because like I asked, I'm glad that you asked my questions on, you know, that we keep exporting the raw materials instead of producing them, like in case of Alex Corn, whatever. How are SOCs actually meeting their
development
and is it enough?
Okay. Honourable Brother, I was about to put.
Okay, can I put it slightly different and say maybe a report on the social impact of the socio-economic development objectives?
Okay.
Then that will give us a clearer picture. That one I have for Obama.
Okay. Let me take this opportunity to thank everybody who came to attend this meeting and also all the participants. It has been a very productive and fruitful discussion. We have learned a lot, and we hope what we have agreed upon will be taken care of as a particular DG from the GPE, that when we meet next round, we are able to assess how far we. When we come next time, we want to hear that Humba is no longer shipping. Transnet must refuse to say, take it back. We need... Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. We remain at portfolio committee and look into the last minutes of our meeting. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.